We're the Pragmatic Doulas.
This is a podcast where we talk all about birth and other interesting things.
Birth may be a goddess, but she doesn't want to be worshipped. She wants to be respected. She doesn't want incense. She wants
common sense.
Got it. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good wet, rainy morning.
Uh-huh.
I've literally been in my car for 2 hours driving all over Hell's Half fucking Acre. I'm done.
It's only 10 a.m.
And it's only 10 a.m. I left the house at 8. I dropped my son off at, I dropped son number two off at work, went to my uncle's because he's in the hospital to get some stuff for him. Then as I was driving home, he called and said that he's been admitted and he needs his chemo meds and his wallet so he can watch TV. So I had to drive all the way back to his house and then drive all the way to the hospital and then come home. I did stop for Tim's and then sat for about 20 minutes and then drove son number one to work. And now I'm back and I'm like driving and it comes up on my email. Carissa has joined your meeting. And I'm like, I'm getting there.
Then I left.
I know. Then you left. And I'm like, when I came on and I'm like, oh shit, do I have the wrong link? Did I send the wrong fucking link again? Like what's going on?
I realized you're just testing it. Were you just testing it, Carissa?
I felt like it was too early. I might stress her out. It was so funny because that's exactly what I was thinking.
And it did in my car driving in the pouring rain. It's pouring.
Yeah. It just, like, as you said, like 2 seconds before you said that, just stopped.
It's still raining here.
Over here.
Here too. Raining like crazy.
Yeah.
It's only dripping off the patio umbrella.
Give it time. Give it a minute.
Maybe it's moving east to west this time. I don't know.
So how's everybody else? My morning has been ridiculous.
Mine has been pretty quiet and calm. I'm able to do some chores. I woke up early, had my tea, watched the National with Nadia, which is our mother-daughter bonding morning ritual.
Over the news.
I like that. Bond over news. And took care of Ziggy, tidied up a little bit. That's it. So, yeah.
Nice.
Steph, how are you doing?
Crazy morning.
I am excited. I am looking forward to getting the keys to the house today, meeting the contractors, going to the lawyers, all of that fun stuff.
Nice.
Yes, and even more exciting. So a couple days ago, I got to see my sister for the first time and touch my sister for the first time in a year and a half. Wow. And it's like it broke the dam. Everything is making me cry now.
Oh, so, no.
And then my friend Sherry messaged me this morning, today's the day, like from Ajax, because it's she and I, the person I bought the house from is like a mutual friend. So she got all hyped up this morning and messaged me and it made me start crying. I'm like, oh God, I don't need a crying headache before I hit the road in this rain. But it's positive tears. It's all been good tears, but I can't stop. Everything's making me cry.
Yep.
I know for me, once that, yeah. Once the floodgates open, I know I won't be able to stop. So I am not able to cry anymore. I've flicked that switch and I now no longer have that ability. Nothing makes me cry.
The day something happens with Kim, we're gonna have to gather around and wipe up the puddles off the floor because
buckets to collect.
I'll have to be admitted to something, to some unit somewhere.
Maybe that's what they're talking about when celebrities are admitted to the hospital for exhaustion. They hold on to it so long, and then they gotta let go, and literally, if you're exhausted, your body just gives out. Maybe that's what we're gonna have to do. We gotta get you into one of those. Call somebody up and say, look, Kim is dealing with exhaustion. We've got about 6 years worth of tears just happened.
Eight.
Yeah. Eight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll have
it won't happen.
Yeah. It won't happen. Well, I don't have a deep reserve. I cry all the time for every single thing. And I don't carry things. When stress starts, I'm immediately looking for a way to release it, manage it, whatever. I just don't have the ability to store it up and soldier through. I just cannot. I fall apart. As soon as there's a sign that says, this is a fall apart worthy situation, I fall apart.
You have permission.
Yeah.
And well, that's,
or even if I don't have permission, I'm not good at holding it together. And so I will never have to be admitted for that, because it's like, so it's like you have like this pressure valve and then every, like a pressure cooker, and then you, oh, it's like the Instant Pot. You can, when you put the stuff in the Instant Pot, you can set it to like, all the pressure builds up, and then when the food is finished cooking, you can move the little thingy and all of it releases at once. Or you can do the other setting where while it's cooking, it releases the pressure little by little, right? So I'm that. I can't hold it in and then do it fall apart. I can't. I'm not.
I think I have two valves then, because I cry, but the cry after I got to touch my sister for the first time in a year and a half was a different cry. Like, it was a wail. We were both wailing on the front porch of her in-law's house. My niece came downstairs to see what was going on, and then I hugged her and I cried some more. So it was like a different stage of wailing. But yeah, I'm just gonna keep going. So
you guys are very touchy people. So
my sister and I, very, very physically affectionate. Like, we're constantly like playing with each other's hair and
Sister and I are not like that.
It's a different type of closeness.
Yeah, we didn't see each other or touch each other. I don't know if we have touched each other. I've seen her a million times, you know, over the last, not a million times, but I've seen her a good amount of times over the last few months. And I don't even know if we've touched each other. I don't feel like lacking.
That's so, not your love language.
That's not, we're not like that. Yeah.
My sister and I are very touchy. It's very similar to Stephanie. Like, if I don't know what I would do if I could. I don't see her that often, but if I couldn't see her, I don't even know what I would do. I guess you manage, right, Steph? But
yeah,
hard.
I don't know how I managed, but you know what? Knowing that I could make her sick and that she had already had COVID, it's hard, because I wanted to take care of her when she was sick, but I was not the person who was allowed to take care of her when she was sick.
Yeah.
But now we can. Woo-hoo.
Perfect. I don't have a sister.
There you go. That takes care of that problem.
Yeah.
There you go.
And house closing days are always very stressful and emotional for, I've only done it once. And I remember feeling like I was holding my breath the whole day, because I was just positive something was not going to go right, as things often don't when you are buying or selling, but it did. It all worked out. So you will be fine, Steph.
Everything will be fine.
Yes.
So what are we talking about today?
That book. Okay.
It's book club day. I'm going to pretend I never heard anything anybody said about the book, and I'm going to be hearing it for the very, very first time.
Because I've been complaining for a week.
Yeah, that's my plan. Before we get to that, should I do our land acknowledgement?
Just before that, as usual, we do have Carissa with us for our book club. Oh, yeah. I'm so,
in case you didn't notice,
I'm stupidly happy that she's here. I love her being on here. I love how she thinks, and she's amazing. So welcome, Carissa, to,
and I want you, I'm gonna ask Carissa, Stan, I want to see this thing you're wearing. What is that?
I'm wearing a very bizarre outfit, and one sec, see if I can move back. It's a dress.
Yeah,
I'm wearing it over pants.
Okay, so I love that.
Flowy dress, yeah.
It's very pretty.
Way too much.
Why are you wearing pants underneath it? Because I don't understand pants in July. So that's just me.
Oh, they're like really thin pants. Oh,
okay. Like PJ pants.
I'm not sure why I'm wearing them together. I had them on and I put the dress, because what I was wearing before, I couldn't have on right now. So I didn't take the pants off, I guess.
All right.
Yeah, we've just outed your outfit. So
it's okay. It's okay.
It looks very pretty. Thank you. I like it. And flowy.
Mm-hmm. It's super soft. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Thank All right, cool. Land acknowledgement.
Okay, let me pull it up. And I want to say that I found a land acknowledgement that I really liked. It is not like the official City of Toronto one like we usually do. Was it this week or last week? A friend of most of ours told me about a place that I could go to get affordable acupuncture treatments. Ooh. Called Toronto Community Acupuncture. And it's a healthcare clinic that practices traditional Chinese medicine. And part of their offerings, part of their services is to offer very affordable sliding scale rate acupuncture treatments. So I went off to explore their website, and their land acknowledgement is good. I like it. So there, it is there. I'm gonna give them all the credit. So this is the land acknowledgement written on the TOCA, T-O-C-A. That's their website, toca.ca, I think, or toca.com, I can't remember. But if you are looking for affordable acupuncture treatment, that is the place to go, according to Lisa Caron. I haven't been there yet, so I can't personally vouch for them, but so far I really like this land acknowledgement. So let me put my glasses on. So I'm going to replace Toca with the Pragmatic Doulas, because that's who we are. Okay. The land on which the Pragmatic Doulas operates has for thousands of years been the traditional land of the Huron, Wendat, Haudenosaunee, and Anishinaabeg peoples, including the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nations. Today, this meeting place is still home to many Indigenous people from across Turtle Island. The colonial processes by which we, meaning us, the Pragmatic Doulas, including myself, the colonial processes by which we all came to live on this land were and are deeply unjust and continue to cause great harm to the original people of this land. And so the Pragmatic Doulas endeavor to be accountable to this reality individually and collectively in ways that go beyond just an apology or a written acknowledgement. We also seek to be guided by the traditions around healing and birth and parenting traditions that are passed down by Indigenous elders to respect those concepts and beliefs about the land and the water which grow and sustain us all. And we welcome feedback on our efforts.
Very nice.
Thank you. I like that very much because it acknowledged, touched on a lot of points. So there you go.
Excellent.
All right. Who's going to facilitate? Who's heading up this discussion? Do we need like somebody who's going to move us on? I'll start by saying,
Heard it? You are an official book club leader.
No,
you recommended the book, so I think it should be you.
There you go. I didn't know that that's the way it is.
I facilitated the one I recommended.
Okay, that's fine. So let's go
at
around.
At which point, we are now never recommending any book whatsoever.
Okay, so today we are discussing the book Expecting Better by Emily Oster, O-S-T-E-R. I chose this book, number one, because we're always floundering around for a book to read. And it occurred to me that several of my clients have talked about this book in glowing terms. They love this book. And I bought it with that in mind. And then it occurred to me as we were floundering around looking for a book that it might be a good book for us to do for book club. We haven't, have we ever done a nonfiction book? No. I don't think so. So this is our first nonfiction book, and I thought that'd be a nice change. So that's why I recommended Expecting Better by Emily Oster. Now, we're going to go around and everybody's just going to give a rating and a quick explanation why they chose that rating. Okay, I'll start. I'm going to give this book, so first I got to explain that when I say I'm going to give this book this number, it's not a number in relation to all the books I've ever read, okay? Within its category, so it's a nonfiction book that speaks very pragmatically and factually and scientifically and in an evidence-based way, by and large, about different issues that come up during pregnancy and birth, okay? So within that arena, I'm going to give it an 8. So that's not an 8 according to like all the books I've ever read in my life, just no. With those books. Right. Yeah. So that's me. Right. Stephanie?
That is my rating as well. If I were to come to this book as a pregnant person or even a new doula, I would give it an absolute 8. There's a little bit of story. There's a little bit of information. There's telling you how to grab it. It, and that speaks to me. I am such a research-based person that granted, I only got 100 pages in, but it's because the information I already knew, but I really, 8 out of 10 for delivery for somebody who is pregnant, for sure.
Great. Carissa?
I think if I was pregnant, this book would have made me so happy. Like Stephanie said, when I was pregnant a million shilling years ago, I had one book. There was no internet. You can say that a million times, but I only had one book and I went to that book all the time, right? And it was like a Bible for me. Like I just used it for references to stages and things that were happening and things like that. So I think a book like this, would, especially in this day and age, can really put people's mind at ease because the stuff she talks about were the things I was doing. If I wanted to have, I didn't drink when I was pregnant. I think I may have had a couple of beers or something. I never thought about it. I smoked cigarettes. I know I shouldn't have, but I did. So all kinds of different things. I think that it can just put someone's mind at ease and give you some quantitative or qualitative facts to base your decisions on. I found it, I got to 88 pages in and I would definitely refer this book to clients. I would definitely refer back to the book for different bits of information. But I had trouble reading it from front to back. For sure.
And what was your rating?
Sorry, I didn't say. I would say an 8. Yeah, I'll say an 8.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And Kimberly.
So I'm going to go 6 because I actually did not like this book. I did appreciate in the beginning talking about, you know, the benefits, risk analysis, and, you know, using your own instincts and whatnot and how not everybody's decision is going to be the same. I love that underlying sort of message within the book. I read it probably fairly critically, not as a pregnant person. I think if I was reading this now as a pregnant person, it would actually probably scare the crap out of me. And I probably wouldn't have gotten very far into it because there's just the language in which it was written reminded me of a textbook and it made my ears want to bleed. Like I just reading through it, I wanted to just burn it. The other thing is it needs to be rewritten with more inclusive language. And there's a couple of terms that were used in there that were offensive to people. I did appreciate, I guess, this using the studies and things like that. But I gotta say, as I'm reading it, it felt like she was looking for studies to back up her own theory as opposed to looking at all the studies and laying out, because there never appeared to be anything negative in here as to what she was looking for. And if there was anything, she poo-hooed it as not a good study. It felt biased to me in that respect. And as I was reading it, it felt like, I don't know, it felt like it was her story and that you needed to do what she did. Even though the underlying tone was, you know, yeah, you can do what you want, but there were little bits in it was like, you know, this is what XYZ said, but you know, you can do what you want, which is, you know, not what I did. I didn't do that. I did this. So it kind of felt like it was like passing it off. So it felt a little like it was being written by somebody who was privileged. It felt like somebody who was writing it, it felt elitist. I got 183 pages in. I didn't actually have that much further left to go. But I won't be finishing it, to be quite honest. I think if clients are reading it, I respect that and I appreciate it. And I've had clients say, you know, I hate it when they do this. Yeah, you're right. That's what this book said. I'm like, well, you're fucking right. I'm right. I know what I'm fucking talking about. Don't tell me I'm right. I already know I'm right. And just because, you know, Emily Oster said it doesn't make me any less wrong. So I don't know. I didn't like it, but I certainly, if people are reading it, I respect that. I don't think there's many good books out there as far as birth and pregnancy goes, but I don't know. I also didn't like the way she kind of poo-hooed like acupuncture and herbs and more natural things and things like that. I wasn't appreciative of kind of the way she kind of brushed that stuff aside and not even with yoga. It's like, it's not really something that I did and I didn't really like it. And, you know, there's no studies on this. And then, okay, well, whatever. I think yoga is really good. So prenatal yoga is really good, but you know, we'll go with what you say. So anyways, that's just my opinion. I didn't really
like it. I actually remember a point just because I probably was the one who got the farthest in. I didn't finish it either. but there was a section where she talked about acupuncture, and she did say that there were studies that showed that acupuncture did help and laid it out quite factually. I think that the appeal of this book for new parents that may turn off doulas is exactly the fact that they in the book were expectant parents who were researching these things for themselves, and that there were economists and very fact-based and stats-based and numbers-based. I think that's what appeals to a lot of those expectant families. And I agree, there was a couple of instances where I thought, that term is not something that I know it says updated for 2019, but I don't think we're even saying that in 2019, but okay, whatever. And I get it, what you're saying, that it felt a little bit privileged and elitist. I guess I'm just used to that. So it doesn't even register anymore, because show me a book that isn't privileged and written from a privileged and elitist perspective.
Well, and maybe that's the problem that we have nowadays, is that we don't have books that are written for, you know,
from a perspective of somebody who isn't in an elitist or writes in a way that doesn't sound elitist. How about that?
Yeah.
You can be privileged and still write a book that doesn't highlight
that uses inclusive language and, you know, and honors the traditions of, you know, other cultures and things like that. But I don't know.
You are 100% right about that though. Yeah. It did not use inclusive language.
No. And I mean, even if it's been updated for 2019, like Jesus Christ, come on. That was only two years ago.
Yeah. I did all of the mom and mother references.
Yeah.
Did show up in my brain. Yes.
This excluded an entire group of people that will not want to read this book.
Yeah.
I've had this conversation even off topic, but something that's on my website. And I asked someone from the LGBTQ community how they felt about it. And more than one. One was totally okay with it. One said, I would read it, not be offended, but wouldn't go further. Mm-hmm. So certain things can really exclude someone. Mm-hmm. And a book that you would want, you know, that information to reach a lot of people, I think it's an unwise choice. Yeah, it needs to be updated. Also, to say that yoga isn't good for pregnancy, how could you even say that?
Because she didn't like yoga. She doesn't like yoga.
I didn't like it. Get that feeling from her at all. That
that was
doing.
That was awesome.
For those that are only listening to us,
I just had a creatures running across my living room. One of them was
a little sneak attack in the back.
Yeah,
that was adorable.
I didn't actually get that from her. I did not get the feeling that she was inserting her. I felt like she was really looking hard at only fact, because there probably aren't a lot of studies that measure the actual any measurable benefits of yoga. They probably aren't. I can say, as a doula, in my experience, the clients that I have had who have used yoga during their pregnancy have had easier outcomes, easier labors, and so on. I can say that based on my experience. Yeah. I cannot say statistically yoga improves this aspect of birth or that. I can't say that. And I think that is what she is saying. And also, she didn't. She doesn't like yoga. A lot of people don't like yoga, but she didn't.
And I get that. Yeah. And I get that. But the thing is, she started the entire paragraph with about 15 sentences of, I hate yoga. I hate yoga. I hate yoga. I hate yoga. So at that point, even no matter what she says after that,
yeah,
it's going to be yoga's bad. Because this person, who's an expert, who I've loved everything up until this point, hates yoga. So I'm not going to bother with it. Even though for that particular person, maybe yoga is the best thing that could actually happen to them. I just don't like the idea of some of the things that went in there. It just felt dismissive of things that were not, things that couldn't be quantitative. Okay. And I get that's where her mind works. And I get that's where it is, but come on, we all know that birth is a mind body connection, and you can have all the fucking stats you want, but if you're going into this birth without a positive, open, non-quantitative, you know, way of measuring that brain of yours, your birth is going to not necessarily go well. Okay. We know this.
Yes.
But none of that's in here.
But that is the.
That's the woo woo stuff, right? This had no woo woo stuff.
She's actually not a expert. I think
she's coming across as one.
No, that's your take on it. She's not coming across as one. She's an economist. And she says that straight up, having her first baby, knowing nothing about this process. And so she dived into all of the aspects of pregnancy and birth.
My clients are reading this, reading her as an expert. My clients are reading this saying, you know.
I think you're assuming that your clients aren't smart enough to figure that out like you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm wrong then. That's fine.
Like, I love Erica Chidi, right? I love her. I love her book. But there's parts of that book that don't ring true for me. But if I referred that book to so many people because I like the way she writes and I like the things she talks about. But it has to be, take a little bit from this one and take a little bit from that. Take a little bit from over here. Take some from me.
You know? I totally get it. And I respect what you guys are saying. I don't like it. So yeah, that's not going to change my mind.
No. Not trying to do that.
No. It's fine that somebody doesn't, that you don't like it. But
no, I get exactly what you're saying
about your reasons.
Those are my reasons, so it's fine.
On the bandwagon,
and most of the clients that I
yes, Steph,
huh?
What were you going to say, Steph?
Oh, I said I will hop on the bandwagon of dismissiveness when in the section where she talks about BMI.
Don't even get me started about fucking BMI.
Like she got off. for somebody who really was, you know, adding in, like really trying to take all points. And when we talked about, she talks about people from different poverty levels and, you know, other things that impact the statistics. When she really ripped through the high BMI section without even talking about the biases about people with high BMI.
Yeah.
There's so many other biases that could have impacted the numbers. I was waiting for those things to get pulled into that section.
But just, it didn't.
You know, there's racial disparities. There are weight disparities. Like people are literally told you should have a C-section because you're overweight.
Yeah.
Like your body won't know what to do. They're treated like they're sick before they're sick.
You know, like, and it felt like she was saying, you know, if you eat a lot, you're going to have a big baby. Well, that isn't necessarily true. Yeah. And, you know, you can eat, you know, exactly what you're supposed to eat and still have a 10-pound baby.
But what's wrong with having a big baby? I had two. Well,
that's the other thing. It was like,
were we reading the same book? Because on page 146, the bottom line on weight, on average, if you gain more weight, your baby will be larger. If you gain less weight, your baby will be smaller. Just fact, based on numbers and statistics. Both very large and very small babies face additional risks, although two small babies face greater risks. If anything, you should probably be more concerned about gaining too little weight than too much. Last point, but mostly chill out.
Okay, but again, this is like a small, tiny section after a whole bunch of bullshit about BMI. Like,
but she's never said, oh, if you're too fat, it's bad. She talked about the evidence. This is what the numbers show. If you gain this much weight, and she was very, very plain about saying it was stupid the way they said, oh, if you weigh 130, if you gain 35 pounds, you're good. But then if you gain 36 pounds, where's this cutoff point that it's really, and that there's too much focus on that and that we shouldn't worry about it so much because it's not so much of a big deal. That's the message that I got.
That I didn't make it that far into the book, but earlier in the book, when she talks just about BMI and stuff, it is dismissive. Like she jumps to, you know,
the fat phobic, to be quite honest. And for someone who is fat, I did not appreciate it.
At the end of that initial section earlier in the book, it was really simplified. And I was like, wait, but in the previous section, you pulled in things about economics and poverty and other things that impact this. And so she went right to the, you know, at the end of each section, she kind of has the breakdown, the simplification. It's like, but you can't simplify because there are biases against those people. You know, like I can't tell you how many clients I have who have a higher BMI who are told, well, maybe you can't have a VBAC because of your higher BMI. It's like, but she doesn't have gestational diabetes. She doesn't have the other things that, you know, they're talk about being more present in somebody who has a higher BMI. It's just BMI. So there's times where she breaks down statistics and says, but we can't actually rely on these statistics because of disparities for here, here, and here. And she doesn't really dive into that for people with higher BMI. Like she doesn't dive into it in the same way she dives into like deli meats.
Because she doesn't have a high BMI. This is what I'm saying. Like this book is written for her. That's how I read it. It's her story.
And that makes sense. It's just,
and I get that.
I would hate for somebody with a higher BMI to start that section and then be like, oh yeah, it's true.
But I'm going to have a C-section or I'm going to have a giant baby.
Yeah. But
it doesn't say that. I read that whole section, eating for two, you wish. It doesn't say that. I never got that message at all. As a matter of fact, I felt she was saying, don't worry about it. That's exactly what I felt like she was saying. Oh, okay. And I actually started reading this book. I had read this other book before by some other woman, Rebecca something or other. I think she was a journalist. And oh my God, that book was so negative about every single, basically it made me feel like, why are you even having a baby? Because she was just so mad about everything, irritated her, everything was dumb, everything was stupid. Rebecca Ecker, she was a journalist or something like that. And for some reason I mixed that book up with every time I would hear about this book, I thought, oh, maybe it's like that lady's. I thought it was her. And so whenever my clients would say, oh, we love this book, I was like, what? So I kind of went in thinking, oh, I'm probably going to be like writing all these things. Nope, that's stupid. Nope, that's wrong. And so I was actually surprised when I didn't hear her talking like that. I just did not get that at all. And I present, I like the way she presented information factually, and do with it what you will. Here's the information, do with it what you will. The statistics say X, Y, and Z. And as a matter of fact, she did not speak about the real and the, for people who are morbidly overweight, there are people whose weight will impact their pregnancy. That's a fact. We can't pretend that that's not true. We're not talking about somebody who needs to lose 30, 40, 50 pounds. We're talking about people who are 100, 200 pounds overweight. Those situations do impact, and there are consequences of those pregnancies. And she didn't go there. She was just talking sort of the mainstream, ordinary. And no, she did not talk sociologically about anything about how racism impacts healthcare and so on. And I did sit and think to myself, how much am I going to be expecting from a privileged white woman in writing factually about pregnancy and birth? The textbook, somebody said, I don't remember who it was, maybe it was Kim, who said this reads like a textbook, but it's not a textbook. She is writing about her own experience. And here I am, a woman of color who's had five babies, and I'm marginalized and all of that. And maybe that is the issue, because I am so used to reading about novels, books from the white perspective, that it just washes over me now. Because I remember in my other book club, we read The Help. You guys know that book, The Help?
Yeah.
Very famous book. Everybody loves it. They made a movie about it. And I brought up, and this is a room, 12 Black women in this room. And I said, are we not sick and tired of reading about our experiences from a white woman's perspective? And I threw the book down, and everybody was like, what? I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
I didn't even remember that. It didn't even occur to me. And I go, yeah, because that's what we're used to all the time. So maybe that's what's happening to me, that I just read it and said, yep, Emily Oster is writing about her experience, and did some research about all the stuff that she went through or that she was concerned about. And these are the numbers. There's way more. There is much more. Like, you could dig deeper into every single one of these issues that she speaks about in the book. But this is it. She wrote a book that was like 200 pages or whatever. And don't, you know, research the authors and who they are and where they're coming from before you read a book, if you're going to do that. Otherwise,
So I am coming from the BMI specific stuff. I guess you would certainly be, because everything's fucking written by primarily cis white women. So, you know, you're kind of used to being like, what the fuck, you know? That is the perspective. With the BMI stuff, I didn't make it to that section, eating for two, you wish. I mean, and I did wish, and I did eat for two often after the first and second trimester. But the first section actually came to just prep work. And that's the section I was referring to, where it felt like she had glanced over it. And her bottom line there was, being obese before pregnancy is associated with an increased risk of complications for both you and your baby. If you are significantly overweight, like you said, Suzanne, weight loss before pregnancy may have benefits, certainly. But one of those benefits is that you're less likely to be like frowned upon or directed or made to feel less than, or right out of the gate treated like you're already sick. But we all know people who are overweight and who are healthy, you know?
Yes, 100%.
100%. So it's just that people, this is what I wanted, and this is my bias. I wanted her to acknowledge the biases that were there. And maybe
she didn't acknowledge bias in anything that she talked about, though.
She did acknowledge one area. Bias. She did, there's a couple places where she acknowledged economic bias. So where some parents were educated and might have more access to different types of.
Yes. Things. Yes, she did.
But she didn't kind of go into the economic bias around obesity. We need that book. Anyone want to write that book? The book of biases?
Maybe she figured that why a person was the weight that they were was not the focus of this book, because that's too big of a topic to get into. She just wanted to say, if these are the numbers on, if you weigh this much and that much, why you weigh this much or that much is not what she's talking about. She's just saying, because that's a whole big other story.
Isn't it?
And yes, she could have, it is. And it's an important story and an important thing that we need to focus on.
That could be a whole book in itself, the book of birth biases that impact health outcomes of birthing folks. You know, like that could really be a whole thing.
Yeah, definitely.
What was your favorite part of the book? What did you really like about it? Was there any one section that really did grab you and you said, shit, yeah.
We
said, you know, Kim gave it a solid 6 for her. So there weren't parts that really grabbed her other than saying.
6 is still not a shitty rating.
Shit. Yeah. But we gave it an 8.
More than 5.
More than 5.
So more than 50%. More than barely passed.
It was a, what is that? 6 out of 10 would be a C or C plus.
I liked hearing the perspective of somebody who took the time to dive into numbers and statistics. I you know, it kind of reminded me of like how I feel about The Thinking Woman's Guide to a Better Birth by Hensie Goer.
Yes. Yes. I love that book. It's dry. Yeah.
Without the personal stuff.
Yes. Right?
Without the personal stuff, that book just says, here's what the numbers say. Here's what the statistics say. And it kind of reminded me of that. And here are the risks if you do this, and here are the risks if you do that. Now you decide what you want to do with that. That's what I liked. So not like, and I felt like that's mostly that was how the entire book was kind of structured that way. And that's why I gave it an 8. Because it feels like that's the way that I hope that's the way that I speak to my clients. If you want to know about an epidural, here is the straight up information about it. And if they say to me, well, you have 5 kids, did you have it? No, I did not have an epidural. My reasons for not having an epidural are my personal reasons, but that has nothing to do with your birth. Because she did say she didn't choose to, she decided not to have an epidural. And her husband was really doubtful about that. And she still went ahead and chose not to have an epidural, even though she didn't find anything scary bad about having an epidural. Yeah. And that's how I present the information to my clients. Here's the information about having an epidural. You decide for yourself if the risk of post, what's it called? Like the headache you get after you haven't some that you can get. One in 200. I've heard anesthetists say 1 in 100. And that is the one thing that would scare me about having, I would choose maybe not to have an epidural because I'd be afraid of that, because I've had that before. That's happened to me when I've had a lumbar puncture years ago, and it didn't last a few days. It lasted 3 fucking weeks and it was torture. And the risk 1 in 100, I might choose not to have an epidural because I'm so scared, and 1 in 100 is too big a risk for me. Whereas for somebody else, it's not. But I just tell me the numbers and then let me decide myself personally. That's how I felt that information was presented.
Yeah, for ahead of time. However, we've all seen the clients who are like walking backwards into the hospital, like, can we get an anesthesiologist here? Yeah, go through your risks. I'm just going to say, yes, please. Yep, good with that. You know, but it is good to know it ahead of time.
So, right. So this is a book to read before you go into labor, or to have prenatal visits with your doula before you go into labor to get all this information. So that's why I gave it an 8, because I agreed that's what I like the most about it overall, the way that that information was presented. And then you are left to decide on your own. What Emily Oster decided to do, that's fine. That's good for her. Like, I don't want to learn the sex of my baby beforehand with most of them. But they couldn't handle not knowing, so they went ahead and learned the sex. That's fine. Everybody has different decisions that they'll make based on the information. So, yeah.
Oh, certainly.
So what did you like? What was the part that you liked the most?
I'll give you the exact line that made me decide to keep reading. It's in the caffeine, alcohol, and tobacco section. It says, I'm gonna just read the whole, what do you call that thing? Paragraph, that's it. All the evidence I used for this is publicly available, accessible to anyone. That includes the people who make the official recommendations. So why did my conclusions differ from theirs? Two reasons. One is overinterpretation of flawed studies, but the bigger thing, and this is the part I like, I think, is the concern, which is expressed to me over and over again by doctors, that if you tell people they can have a glass of wine, they'll have three, or one giant bowl of wine. I'm actually in the wrong section here. Hold on.
I remember that spot, yeah.
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 It is better to say you can't have any, as that rule is easy to understand.
Yes.
Yeah. That feels, again, like pregnant women are not given any more credit than children would be in making important decisions.
And she's right. And that's why I didn't feel like she was infantilizing anybody, because she says, this is the case in a lot. This is the situation in a lot of cases. It isn't just, I've heard that from, I had some clients who, one was the birthing person was a medical malpractice lawyer, and the partner was a pediatric emergency doctor. And he said straight up that, yes, I forget what the situation was that we were talking about. It's yes, that doctors often give advice based on what they assume will be compliance issues, like how they assume the client will comply or not comply. And then they give advice based on that. So if they think that, if they tell people it's okay to drink one glass of wine, they're going to, this person's going to drink a whole bottle of wine, so I'm going to tell her to drink none. And that happens a lot.
Yeah.
And it's very similar.
I just wanted to continue her thought there. To put it mildly, I'm not crazy about the implication that pregnant women are incapable of deciding for themselves, that you have to manipulate our beliefs so we do the right thing. I think we've all been there with someone, basically anyone who's trying to mansplain shit to us. Sometimes obstetrics feels like we're being fucking mansplained. You know, Kim, you've had that client who was told, well, you have to, that just mansplained to her basically, well, you have to have a vaginal exam. No, bitch, I don't. And I'm going to turn around and mansplain to you exactly the fact that this is my fucking vagina, you know? Go get some trauma-informed care and come back and talk to me when you give a shit about your clients. You know, like it's mansplaining. That is basically what it is. It's a culture, because we get it from all care providers, not just male care providers. It is a culture of care that we're just going to give you less information and flat out information instead of information that helps you as a client make decisions. And I see it across a lot of different types of healthcare, but primarily in birth and folks healthcare. Like dumbing it down.
Yes.
So for anyone who's looking for good information, you know, outside of this book too, and outside of Hensie Goer's book, she did an amazing breakdown of, what's the name of the study? The 39 week induction study?
The was it called the Dare step? It had a name. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Where it's better to induce at 39 weeks.
Yeah, that one. We brought it out.
And Arrive. Arrive?
The Arrive study?
Yeah.
Hensi Goer, if you look up the Arrive study and Hensi Goer, she laid it out. Here's the flaws in it. Here's why it looks like it works, but here's why it actually doesn't work. And it doesn't come to the same conclusions that are actually given. And again, she just laid it out and I could almost see her banging away on her computer in her head, like, motherfuckers, you know, dumbing down the shit, trying to give us less information instead of more so we can't actually make a decision. They're trying to lead us to a decision instead of giving us the information.
Rebecca Decker from Evidence-Based Birth does that too. She had a good sort of breakdown of the study itself as well, and has like a one pager that you can print off with regards to it as well.
Yes.
Rebecca Decker is from Evidence-Based Birth. Rebecca Decker is not the person who wrote this stupid book that I'm talking about. Her name was Rebecca, but it's not Rebecca Decker from Evidence-Based Birth, who I like very, very, very much. Another Rebecca. So yeah, never mind that. Don't go yelling at Rebecca Decker.
So all of us over here with all different types of baby brain. I can't remember the Arrive study. You can't remember which Rebecca we're in. Anybody else have something they've forgotten today?
Everything.
What I was gonna say is when Hensi Goer or Rebecca Decker sits down and picks apart the study, I love that. I would also, though, like to see a response to their response. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because it's fine that they said, the study is very flawed, those conclusions are incorrect, and here's why, blah, 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 blah. I would like to hear somebody who did design the study or participate in the study say, okay, well, here's the reasons why you think this, that, or the other thing. Because sometimes you hear stuff that makes a lot of sense on the surface, but then there's a reason behind it. So even though you don't like it initially when you first hear it, once you hear the reason behind it, you say, oh, okay, that makes sense now. I understand why things have to be that way or whatever. When I was doing a lot of my own personal research about taking the COVID vaccine, that's what I found, that it wasn't enough to just hear what I wanted to hear, that you need to go behind what you think you want to hear and then behind again until you get to the end, until there's nowhere else to go. That's how you have the whole picture to be able to make a good decision. So
that's a couple things. That's bias.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, ignorance is bliss. Is that the saying that if you don't know something, you're fine just the way you are? And when someone wants to challenge that, you can be defensive because you don't know. But when you do know, it's hard to not know. So that's how you make decisions, right? That's how you collect information and make decisions. Whether you thought they were the right decision in the beginning or not, you change your mind because the evidence has been placed in front of you.
That's right. So if you were going through, let's say you were going through brain, right? We always tell our clients who are information searchers to use the brain breakdown. And intuition is part of that. You know, what do you feel? What do you feel about this? Because like, you know, we can have all the statistics in the world, but if it's not lining up with what you intuitively know is true, then act on that intuition. If it's really strong, if it's really coming for you. Like my client was sent home from the hospital because she felt searing pain in the front of her uterus, you know, and this was the
she
first
was sent time. Home. She was sent home because she felt searing pain?
I sent her in because she felt like she was having a contraction that wouldn't let go. And she was only 32 weeks along. Mm-hmm. And it was very concerning, but she had no bleeding and baby was sounding okay, like rhythmic and stuff like that, a couple little dips, but they said, you know, 32 weeks, we don't know that that's not normal. Because generally speaking, we don't listen to your baby much at 32 weeks. We have a quick listen in the office and that's it. And she left afterwards doubting herself, but still in pain. And she got downstairs and called me and told me that they were sending her home. And then her water broke and it was all blood. She was having a placental rupture. And she's like, I knew something was wrong. I knew. And she went upstairs, and of course she had an emergency cesarean section. But she knew intuitively that that pain was not an okay pain. And again, there, you can't just go on. And she had wanted to be kept to be monitored for more than an hour, and they had said no. But she didn't feel safe being alone. And it was, again, she had all the statistics. They gave her all the statistics, but intuitively she knew that she needed to be where someone could take care of her. So listen to that as strongly. And we, you know, we here in Canada anyway, we pay into it, good healthcare systems. Use them. If you're not feeling awesome, walk into that fucking ER and don't leave until you get what you need. And well, I mean, sometimes you end up escorted out, but you know, make noise, go to another place, find another space, do it, because this information is awesome. And you all know I love a good research-based paper, but listening to that matters. And that doesn't just mean, you know, emergencies. I've had clients who said, you know, I really feel like I need an induction. I really feel like I need to engage in things that many doulas would say, well, statistically, that's not up to date. It's like, no, but this parent is saying that I'm done.
You know, or when people say, I know for sure I'm having a girl or a boy, whatever. They have that feeling. There's nothing. It's based on nothing except
intuition,
a feeling. Or when Jay saved my sister's life based on nothing. As a matter of fact, the evidence showed that everything was okay. And she also was having a placental abruption.
Yeah.
Nothing that showed that except Jay's feelings, her intuition. So there, somebody, I don't know how somebody would write a whole book about that, but these two things need to go hand in hand. And that could be a big flaw. Maybe it could be a big flaw. I was going to say it could be a big flaw in this book, but again,
it wasn't a book about intuition.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. If you're, so therefore you would never write a book then, because you can't put everything, you can't show every single side of it. So therefore you can't start it. You'd be stuck because you couldn't start it. So yeah, no, I'm not saying that she should have wrote about intuition. I'm saying that we need to take it for what it is and also understand the full picture that birth isn't just about numbers and statistics and facts. It is also about your gut feeling, your intuition.
We'll throw that into that birth biases book, that there's a bias against people who claim that intuition has a place, you know?
You need to write that book, Stephanie.
Oh yeah, you know, just add that on.
In your spare time.
I've got so much. Oh, sweet Jesus.
So what did you?
I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. I was gonna just follow up on what Stephanie was asking about what you did like, but you finish your thought first.
No, I was just gonna say, I don't think the four of us, Stephanie's definitely a stats person, but I don't think the four of us came, I mean, I'm speaking for myself maybe, from a place of factual based information when we had our children either, right? I know I knew nothing about having children, much less than I've heard you guys speak about. I knew very little. So I was only going on intuition and what I felt and how I was feeling, or not know, and my ignorance of not knowing something. So sometimes, you know, this book might appeal to someone who wants to know those things. There might be a lot of people, I know I've had many clients who say, I don't want to know anything. I don't want to know that stuff, right? So
That is a hard one for me sometimes, especially when I see people being directed, but then I have to remember that those people who don't want to know nothing, they don't want to know anything. Sometimes that's intuition, and sometimes that's just
fear,
choosing not to choose, and respecting that as a doula. Oh, that is probably one of my bigger challenges. And I've had to, you know, get on my captain keyboard with Suzanne and Kim more than once and be like, I cannot today. Oh my goodness. You know, she was told because, you know, her BMI is over this, that she should just plan her C-section now. And she's like 30 weeks along. And it's like, oh my gosh. But they're totally down with it because they feel like they're being cared for. They feel like doctors are caring for them and that they're recognizing risks for them. But these are people who are like so fucking healthy.
They trust their doctor.
They do. And I'm not going to break that. You know what? I am not going to impact somebody's birth experience with facts or stats if they are in a blissful state. What I will do is help them plan for a blissful cesarean because that's where they're at. But man, oh man. Man, oh man.
It's very hard.
Well, just also because, so one thing that we do know for sure is somebody who has a higher BMI is more likely to have post-surgical risks. And they're more likely to be discharged without appropriate medication because people who have a higher BMI aren't listened to about their pain. You know, they're told to lose weight when you have pain. We talked about this last week. You know, my aunt having frigging cancer, but you know, they told her to lose weight. Mm-hmm. That's what was causing it, her pain. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. So I just have to kind of take it and move with it and leave the stats behind. And that, although I'm not invested in outcomes, I'm invested in people being well cared for, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
Fuck.
You are. Yeah.
But I would definitely, with the caveat, well, maybe I would need to finish reading it. Because again, Suzanne, you mentioned that there's other pieces that you picked up that I didn't because I stopped at page 110 or whatever. But
yeah, you might have changed your rating if you read it all the way through.
I might have. I mean, I still gave it the 8. I still feel sick about her using terms like mental retardation and her using It was not updated for 2019. I don't know who, or for 2021. Mine says 2021.
2021?
Yeah. Yeah. It's fully revised and updated for 2021, but it certainly was not.
Wow.
I mean, she added more parts about marijuana and stuff like that, a cannabis section. Oh. Yeah. But did not, it's still a lot of she and mothers and mama and stuff like that, and you know, for people, but this book isn't made for mamas and everything, it's made for people who are giving birth,
yeah,
pregnant, they're trying to get pregnant. So I think I you know what, I think I'm gonna write a letter to her and let her know you can do better.
Nice. The next update that comes needs to be actually updated, not just add shit, change and amend some shit.
I am going to offer, I'm going to offer to
now.
Do it for pay. If she wants
to do what? You're going to offer to do what?
I'm going to offer to update the language or forward it, connect her with somebody who can appropriately do the language and make sure they get paid for it. That's what I'm going to do.
Awesome.
Have you guys read Crib Sheet? Now I want to read Crib Sheet.
And now no. I don't want to.
I don't want to either, even though I did give it an 8. Not interested.
I don't want
to. I am interested, but not interested enough to read a whole book from her perspective.
Yeah. Is she the same person that wrote, who's the person that wrote about, not the same person, about, Bringing Up Bebe. Did you guys read Bringing Up Bebe?
Bringing Up Bebe? Is it Bebe?
Bebe, like French Bebe.
Oh, her name, it's the lady on Schitt's Creek. That's who wrote that book. Moira Rose wrote that book, Bringing Up Bebe.
Oh, wow. Okay. Emily Oster wrote it.
Ew.
That too?
It's
written three books?
Oh, maybe Pamela Druckerman, New York Times bestselling author of Bringing Up Bebe. Totally wrong, sorry. Pamela Druckerman wrote Bringing Up Bebe, and I really liked that book. I didn't finish it, but I enjoyed it. I know, I don't finish a lot of things, I'm a Gemini. But it's a good book, and it's written from, again, kind of a much more from a storyline perspective, but she talks about how people in different parts of the world, or in Europe or in France, treat pregnancy and postpartum very differently. it's all drinking wine. They don't really love to breastfeed. They do believe in getting, you know, help to help with the baby, where, you know, people don't go back to work right away, and they don't push infant education. They just let babies be babies. So it's an interesting kind of spin on things, but I thought it was the same author. That's not.
All right.
That's an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. My beloveds, I have to go now because I have to go get keys to my house. Yes.
So exciting.
Excellent. Well, enjoy it. Don't be stressed out. It will all be fine.
It will all be fine. I'm breathing.
Don't stop doing that. Keep doing that.
I will not snap at my husband, even though he...
Don't you dare snap at Roger.
Y'all gonna come and beat my ass. Yes. All right. Wish me all the luck. Big changes.
Enjoy it.
All right.
Happy changes. We'll be glad when you're back over here.
Yes, back in the East End, baby. Closer to Fami.
Okay.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.
So what was the part that you did like? I mean, Kim, was there anything you liked at all about it?
That not really.
Point? No. I think you need to give it a lower.
I mean, you were very generous. I didn't finish it, so I can't say that maybe there would be something. Like I never got to the labor and delivery part. I think that's one of my big issues with birthing books or pregnancy books is it really is sort of, I mean, they do spend a considerable amount of time talking about conception and the first few weeks and whatnot of pregnancy when most people aren't buying these books until, you know, well into, you know, the first or even beginning of the second trimester.
Yeah.
And usually like 10 to 20% of the entire book is spent on the actual labor and delivery itself. And I think there needs to be more spent on that particular section because it's a huge amount of information. I mean, we have like 2-3 day classes based on it. I have a 6-week series just based on that. And then, you know, 5% is spent on, you know, actually feeding this human. And again, that's a huge part. And maybe 5% is spent on postpartum, which again is like a massive, you know, super important part. So, you know, maybe I would have liked something in, you know, those sections, but from what I actually read, I got just to that section, the labor and delivery section, and then I quit because the math was hurting my brain. So, I mean, maybe I would have liked something in there. I don't know, because generally speaking, when I, as you say, you know, when I talk about things, I talk about statistics and I talk about intuition and I talk about, you know, benefit risk analysis. So I guess that's the part I liked is, you know, coming straight out and talking about, you know, a good way to make a decision and also include your own personal, you know, gut feeling in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you're right. People are not buying this book as they start thinking about having a baby.
Right.
No,
I mean, ideally that would be the best time for them to do it. It's, if you're trying to gather all of this information and different perspectives, you would be, I only know one person who did that, who did all of this research and preparation before they even started trying to get pregnant. So that, but nobody buys these, you buy these books after you found out you're pregnant.
Yeah. Like I tried for a year to get pregnant with Will and never bought any books.
Because you weren't pregnant yet. So you're like,
that's right. I had no idea that this shit, you know, contained preconception stuff and early weeks and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I also feel like this book, I also think that this book caters to that, you know, we were just saying that we've all had clients who didn't want to know stuff, didn't want to know all these details and numbers and so on. That was the norm once upon a time. That was the norm, even though people didn't consciously make a decision that I don't want to know anything. You just didn't know anything based except what you were told by your people around you and what maybe you've seen or been through yourself. And that was okay. Like my mother said to me, so why do people need to come to classes to learn about this stuff? What, aren't they already pregnant? So I would say, I told her, yes, they're already pregnant. It's not a class about how to get pregnant. They're all pregnant already. She goes, so what? So you just stay pregnant until give birth. What is there else? What else is there to know? And I didn't know what to say to her. Mm-hmm. Well, people just want to know. Mm-hmm. But how much do they need to know? And I said, well, it helps them make better decisions about, she goes, well, maybe what they need to know is to choose a good doctor. So that you can trust what your healthcare provider says. If you trust them and you trust that they have your best interest at heart, you don't need to know why you have to be induced, because you trust that they're making the decision in your best interest.
If only that were true.
Yeah. And I said, that's a magic world. Wouldn't that be great? But that doesn't, I could say that I have, if I were to pick Jen McGillivray again as my midwife, and I'll never forget the one thing she said to me that sticks all these decades later, I will never withhold from you anything about your health. I will never have information about your health that you don't have. Never. That's not mine information to have, to hold from you. And that immediately opened the doors to trust. She says, that's not what I'm here for. But yeah, that's a magic world. So I said, things are changed now. The mindset is changed, which is why people write books like this, because it is written for parents. And my Bible that I had was that Sheila Kitzinger, baby and childcare, or whatever it was called.
And that's what I had. It was a big baby front.
Week by week, it had a week by week fetal development in the back. Every Sunday night, I look forward to checking to see what was going on with the baby and reading all the information about the process. Yeah. But there was nothing about making decisions, really. And Sheila Kitzinger was a big home birth person. She wrote books about home birth, but this book that was my Bible was more fact. This is how the birth process
works. Development stuff.
And now people don't only want to know facts, people want to know the reason behind those facts, right? And as we were saying, people also want to know the sociological reasons, the historical reasons behind those facts too. So the need for more information is it's enormous compared to, I mean, we're not that old. My oldest kid is in his late 30s for sure. That's a long time, but it's not 100 years. And that shift has already happened. People want not just the facts, but the reason behind the facts, the numbers and statistics behind the facts, the sociological and historical reasons behind the facts. This is now what people want. So there's a lot of space out there, lots of opportunity for people to put that information out there. You could write a whole, like Stephanie said, a whole book just about bias. You could write several books in a series about bias, just around breastfeeding, maybe around pregnancy, then about birth itself, and so on and so on. You could write a series of books about that alone. Mm-hmm. And then historically, this is the reason why we do this, this, and this. This is the reason why we do this, this, and this. And this is how it impacts these populations and those populations. Whoa. It's enormous. It really is. So go ahead, everybody, start writing books about all of those things. No. All the aspects of everything. I have a book, I think it's called Reproductive Justice. Holy shit, I couldn't read it. It was so dense. It made me feel so dumb. I need a PhD to read this. I could not get through two chapters because I'd keep going back and going, reading over and over, and it was just too much work. So I put it aside. I couldn't read it. But there's a place for that. Somebody is going to read that book.
Stephanie.
We should make her read it, break it down for us.
That book would just sit and collect dust at my house.
I really tried. I felt very smart picking it up, but felt very dumb after about 10 pages because right over
my head. All those books are for reading. Sometimes I think they're for reference. Like you might go to that book for information, but I don't know if it's meant to be read from front to back. Maybe it is. I don't know, but I wouldn't be.
Yeah. Maybe that, maybe I was approaching it in the wrong way. Yeah, for sure. Who knows? Well, any last thoughts about Expecting Better by Emily Oster? I never got to the part about bed rest. It says on the front cover, why bed rest is a terrible idea, which immediately I'm like, fuck off. No bed rest. I want somebody to prescribe me bed rest right now. But I don't know how that's such a, but I didn't get to that. I didn't get to that part, I guess. She stops at birth. She stops and the last chapter is about home birth versus hospital birth. So there's nothing about, so that's what crib sheet is, I suppose.
Maybe.
All about after, because she does say, oh, I didn't even think about what's going to happen after the baby is born. She says she didn't do any thinking at all about what about after you have the baby. She, during her pregnancy, she dived into all of this stuff and didn't think what happens afterwards.
What a waste of energy.
They wrote crib sheet. Yeah. Afterwards. Yeah. So any last thoughts?
Nope.
Well, I don't feel like it was a waste of money. I'm glad I have the book. I can refer back to it. But I, now after speaking to you guys, I don't know if I would refer it to a client now. I don't know if I would. I'd have to think about the client and who the audience is, you know. Because I do like to suggest books for clients. But this one I would only for certain people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I would with lots of caveats and then let them decide.
Yeah. If we talk about
be sure. Prepared, doesn't have this, this, and this, and it has this and this and this.
Yeah.
So read it at your own risk.
That's right.
As any book is really when it comes
to exactly. Exactly. Oh, by the way, my sister just read Birthyard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did
she just read she loves this book. She keeps raving about it.
Yeah, I like that.
She raved about when I said, do you think it would be a better YA book? Because that's what I felt. And then she just thought I was crazy. No. What? No. She loved it so much. She keeps talking about it. She thinks that we should do it for our regular book club.
The Dynamic Doulas was reading it. I'm pretty sure I saw it on their Instagram. But I'm not sure if it was Sarah or I don't know who it was, but I think pretty sure I saw them on their Instagram that they were reading it.
Yeah. Oh well. So of course we don't have another book to tell you what we're going to be doing in September. We don't have a book yet. Who do you think we are?
Yeah.
Not that organized.
Look how long it took us to get this one.
I'll think of something.
So yeah, we'll think of something.
I think you guys told me about this one, The Virgin Curve by Amy McKay. Not a book.
Yeah, I have that one.
I'll think it is.
I've read that book. Yeah.
My sister gave this to me that she'd read it and I didn't know, and she hadn't read The Birth House, so you switched.
Yeah, so there's no, it's not birthy.
No.
Just a book.
Yes. And then there's another one after that.
Is there? That kind
of follows up. Yeah, there is. I forget the name of it, but there is another one. I read that one too, but I can't remember the name. Yeah.
Cool.
We did that one for my regular book club.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, see how it is. But anyway, yeah. All right.
All right, cool.
Okie dokie, everybody. Thank you for joining us and listening to us ramble and rant every week. That's what you come here for. You know it. So.
All right. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. Blah, blah, blah. Whatever. And we will see you next week.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for Carissa. Thank you for coming. Thank you
for having me.
Awesome. Bye.
Bye.